Thanks, everyone, for coming. It looks like we have, once again, a pretty full agenda and a lot of staff preparation for today's meeting. I'm Susan Fowler, president of the Mental Health Board. We'll start with a roll call. Stephanie, if you would.
Tom Moore. Here. Judy O'Connor.
Here.
Joe Omo-Osagie. Elaine Palencia. Kyle Patterson. Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Margaret White.
Here.
Susan Fowler.
Here.
Forum?
Yeah.
Great. We have both new business and old business to attend to today, but we also have a couple of presentations that we're looking forward to. But before we move into approval of the agenda or the presentations, we do allow up to 20 minutes for citizen input, public participation. If there is such participation, we ask that you limit it to 5 minutes so that we will have time to move into the board's business. Is there anyone with citizen input or public participation today? There is? Okay, please come forward and go to the microphone. And if you could give us your name and where you live. And
well, I'm Monica Cherry, and I'm actually speaking as part of Rosecrans, so hopefully this is the most appropriate time to come up and speak. Okay, and I'm here with Joel Sanders with Urbana Police Department, and we just wanted to give some input about some of the things that we've been experiencing over this past year regarding CIT contacts with individuals in our community, the influx of clients that are showing up in the emergency departments, the response times, staff impact that that's having. So I'm going to first allow Joel to speak to some of the data that's been collected on those numbers, and then I will take over from there.
Okay. Again, I'm Joel Sanders. I'm a lieutenant with the Urbana Police Department, currently in charge of our day shift patrol, and I also coordinate our crisis intervention team. I also work with the Champaign County Crisis Intervention Team Steering Committee. The stats I'm going to give are coming from our collected Champaign County-wide and housed in our local database. If you look at what we're seeing right now, about 51%, 51.99% of our incidents when we engage somebody, we're either referring them somewhere, which would be to Rosecrans, to another facility, to their own personal physician or personal caretaker, or we're doing what we call resolved at the scene, meaning we're pretty much leaving the individual in the same place or same condition in which we found them. Another 40% of those are going to petitions, so a petition for involuntary commitment. It's about 40% of everything we're doing is ending up in the emergency room. Then you look at arrests. Surprisingly, the first time we shared these stats, we were asked if we were serious, and it's serious. Only about 7, maybe just shy of 8% of the individuals that we are engaging are actually ending up in the jail. So what we're looking for and what we're really needing is more of the community-based, more of the ways of keeping that, getting that 8% even lower and keeping people from having to end up in there.
And so just real briefly to speak on our end, so I oversee the crisis department, so they're the team that responds to both of the hospitals where these individuals are being taken. And, you know, we've seen a greater influx of clients showing up in the emergency departments, which is actually leading to longer wait times. We have response times that we're supposed to follow for both hospitals built into our contracts, but that becomes very difficult when there are greater numbers of individuals needing to be seen. So this means that clients are waiting longer in the emergency departments, which is incredibly difficult on these individuals who are already in a state of crisis. It is also leading, it's led to times where we've had to kind of call in a bunch of clinicians at one time when there's 9 people literally sitting in the hospital ready to be seen all at one time. So calling in people on their time off. So, you know, and these clinicians are highly specialized to do the job that they do, and that kind of requirement is only going to lead to staff burnout, which is something we don't want. We want these people remaining in these positions to continue to serve the community to the capacity that they do. So we've definitely seen some of that impact on our end as well. And so, you know, we just wanted to be able to speak to that, to some of the stuff that we have been experiencing.
Thank you for sharing this information. So you've seen an increase in the number of calls for crisis intervention, and then of those calls for crisis intervention, over half have led to a referral, and about 8% have led to jail. And those that have led to a referral, you said 40% involuntary commitment, 40% of the 52%, or should I be adding these all together? I guess altogether.
I kind of combined some stuff. Let me just give you the breakdown as I've got it. So resolved at scene is 35.43.
Okay.
Referral is 16.56. Petition is 40.07.
Okay.
Notice to appear, which is a non-custodial arrest, so there's going to be some court action taken.
Right.
Is 1.16, and custodial arrest is 6.79.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. So I'm still trying to get a handle on, and I appreciate this information. I know that we all do. The those that have the petition, the involuntary commitment, are those the ones in the emergency room that are waiting to be seen? And what kind of an increase is that since last year?
We've just come into this information, so we're waiting to compare the data from last year and how that's changing. My report is more of just a subjective one of, you know, what we've seen and been experiencing.
Okay. All right, thanks. Any other comments, Tom?
I have a question for Lieutenant Sanders. How long have you been on the force?
I've been with Urbana for almost 19 years. I've been doing law enforcement for almost 28.
These numbers that you just reported, first, are you surprised by them?
They're about where I would expect them to be.
Are they more than you've seen in your career?
Oh, yes. They're anecdotally, I can go back to my career when I do public speaking. I talk about when I started. Two cases I can think of when we dealt with somebody who was had suicidal ideation. We didn't know what to do with them because we never dealt with it. And now that's probably pretty much a daily, 2 or 3 times a day, our officers are responding to that sort of call. And in the past, you know, we never had to deal with somebody who was the extreme case. And now it's routine for us to deal with somebody who's the extreme case.
Can you think back now, if that's happened over those 19 years, and this seems like a large percentage of what your work is now, what is different about our, because you said we need a community response to deal with this, what is different about our community now than when you first started, and why are you the agency, the go-to agency for these kinds of cases?
Let me start with the second question first. We're the go-to agency because we're 24/7, 365. When you don't know who else to call, you call the police. And when there's nobody for the police to call because we're not the appropriate agency, then we're the ones who respond. And the way things are set up right now, we're the best. I won't say the best. That's not right. We're the most available resource to respond to the call. I think that things that were different when I started here is when I found somebody who was in the need of detox services, when I first started. We could drive them over to Champaign and get them into a detox center at 3 o'clock in the morning if I needed to. If I found somebody on the street who needed emergency shelter, I had someplace I could take that individual to get them emergency shelter. Both of those resources are now gone.
You're here, Monica, for Rosecrans because of your involvement with the police on the crisis intervention team?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, Joel and I have worked personally very closely together for about the past 4.5 years, along with other jurisdictions.
The crisis line is also getting more calls then?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much for sharing the information.
It will include all of the agencies that were funded in the year that just completed. So it doesn't tell you about how things are going right now. You might be more interested in that. So.
Thank you for clarifying that. Today we will be obtaining information on some of the projects that we funded. We'll be looking at the funding priorities and then dealing with old business, which will include some action items. And we hope to move swiftly through the agenda so that we can be out of here again by 7:15, 7:30 at the latest, preferably 7 o'clock, Tom. I can see. Okay, so let's gear towards 7, knowing that we sometimes fall back at 10 or 15 minutes. With that, let's move on to new business. And we have a report on the Champaign Community Coalition Youth Initiative Program with Tracy Parsons.
Your materials for this presentation are not in the booklet, but they're these two, right? Yeah? Three.
OK. Okay, great. So what you have is a copy of the presentation, but also a kind of summary document of the last 3 years of funding you've provided to support this work through the Community Coalition. So first, let me start by thanking the board for an opportunity to share with you work that we're quite excited about and pleased with through the Community Coalition. And the board really has just been very instrumental in making some very necessary, putting some very necessary resources directly into the community. And so in the spirit of time and getting you guys out of here by 7, I'll be brief and be responsive to any questions you may have. So the Community Coalition has been around a number of years. You have in front of you the mission, the vision, and the purpose. A countywide approach to bringing law enforcement, mental health providers, education, park districts, school districts, all together monthly to look at how we address some of the most, our community's most difficult social and economic issues. Coalition was born out of a community violence tragedy, and the impetus from the community to respond in a very positive way is what bore out the development of the Community Coalition. So, as I shared with you, the Mental Health Board and our partnership with the Coalition has been really critical. 2016, the board approved just a little more than $500,000, $535,000 to continue supporting the system of care sustainability work. So you approved $428,000 to go to agencies for directly to agencies for programming and support around youth-guided, family-driven, just and trauma-informed practices and programs. Also part of that $535,000 is a $107,000 allocation for support of our summer initiatives. So this year in 2017 is the third year that you have provided this funding for the Community Coalition. A contract is issued each year to the Don Morey Boys and Girls Club. Mr. Banks is out of town today, but Ray Pratt, Director of Finance, is here to support our presentation. And the contract is with the Boys and Girls Club to manage and organize, work with the subcontractors of the Boys and Girls Club for documentation, meeting contract expectation through the board and the staff. So that's how we structurally do this work each year. So in January of each year, the Community Coalition does a open process with those that attend the monthly meetings, as well as with the executive committee. Lynn serves on the executive committee for the Community Coalition. And we prioritize the work for the year. And so in 2015, we really just looked at how can we do a better job of getting youth into constructive activities to limit the idle time, limit the time that young people can get into trouble and get into activities that youthful people will do. So we've worked really hard to minimize those opportunities. So last year, 2016, we kind of shaped the work a little differently. The first year, we kind of just responded to requests. So we've looked at initiatives in education, arts and recreation, and community engagement. And so I won't go through each one in detail, but I'll just kind of highlight a few. So in the education area, this year in 2017, we funded an initiative through Jericho Church. The other great part about this work for the board is that we've been able to not only work with the traditional organizations, so the Boys and Girls Club and some of those that we know about, but we've really been able to connect with more grassroots organizations in a new and different way that probably doesn't have the organizational capacity to be prepared or be in line to submit an application for the board, but are doing great work in the community and really connected. So through churches, through, again, smaller organizations, and actually even individuals, we've been able to do some really creative work. So Lifeline is a summer camp for youth. I do want to spend a little time talking about Operation Hope Junior. We started this program in the first year, and we are now in the third year, and the youth that are involved in this really have just made a phenomenal change through schools. So that first year, we looked at middle school African-American males who were the highest discipline referral students, highest suspended, highest involved in all of the negative grades. And so we identified 18 of them, all boys, that we brought in for a summer leadership initiative funded through the Mental Health Board. And so that first year, we just saw a phenomenal change. So we went from, as a group, almost 400 discipline referrals to that fall down to around 100 discipline referrals. The district loved it, the initiative, so much that they then hired a full-time coordinator to stay with this group of boys, and that continues through today. This year, we added a new group of middle school students. That first group is now in high school. And so, and we do everything from leadership development. We've been able to take them up to Chicago each summer for White Sox games, tours of museums, the United Center where the Chicago Bulls play, take them down to the lake. Really just a phenomenal experience that has transformed a group of students who are now productive youth in the schools and not the challenged young boys that they were. And so it's really just been fantastic. And again, the work, the funding from the board has enabled us to build a whole initiative through the school district that would not have happened without the funding from the board. So just thank you, and want you to know how that's worked.
So you were successful in leveraging funds.
Absolutely.
The school board picked up.
Yes. So the district has taken on
Champaign.
I'm sorry. Yes. So Dream House is another one of your funding agencies, but this is an initiative that looks at pre-kindergarten, getting boys ready for kindergarten, reading, social skill development. Tracy Dace has done a great job of building this initiative and is taking on more youth than just the pre-kindergarten group. Pathways was a new initiative this summer that we did through Pilgrim Missionary Baptist Church in Champaign. We brought in a group of boys, 10, for literacy, reading, skills development, social skill development. Again, all of these youth are ones who are struggling in school and been able to do some academic enrichment stuff through the summer. And we all know those things around often the struggling kids go through the summer without much reading, academic work, constructive activities. So this work has just really been phenomenal for the students in the summer. This year, through the Boys and Girls Club, we did a pilot initiative up in Rantoul. So a community-based organization that was doing some programming up in Rantoul lost their funding. So the club stepped up with the leadership in Rantoul to do a pilot initiative this summer. That worked fantastic. So we haven't been able to find more long-term funding yet, but that is in the works, and I think the club has some interest in expanding up to the Rantoul area. In the employment area, so we spent a lot of time talking about the importance of teaching youth around the importance of the world of work, exposure, awareness. So through the Mental Health Board, we've been able to do the last two summers a summer employment program for the Urbana School District. We employ up to 40 students and organizations and businesses throughout the community. And they also go through pre-employment training. They do resume development, all those things around the world of work. And so the RPC serves as the fiscal agent. They actually do the fiscal services for all of the summer programs in the community, but that's a great, important partnership for Urbana students. I include it here. We've been doing this program in Champaign for, I think, 7 years now. And so the city of Champaign and Champaign Schools has a separate initiative, but through the coalition, we want to treat all of the employment work together. So we've got a fantastic, exciting partnership that's been developed with the Chamber of Commerce, both cities, both school districts. There's an initiative called Care for You. So we're all at the table coordinating summer employment activities for youth to maximize the number of kids that are working, to increase the number of private sector opportunities, and then the employment sites that we have kids working at during the summer. Community engagement. We've got, again, a number of initiatives that we've been doing. So I'm going to briefly touch on CU Fresh Start at the end of the presentation. But we've got an initiative that's called Truce, where we've been doing community training around violence interruption and putting a team of trained interrupters. So as we have our violence incidents that take place in the community, we're able to have a team of individuals to be able to go and respond and connect with the families, hopefully disrupt retaliation and all those types of things that happen with those violence incidents. So we've been showing the last year and a half the film Racial Taboo to help increase opportunity to talk about the very difficult subject of race to date. And again, the board funds our showing of the film. We've had 13 showings. So not only have we been showing the film, but the University of Illinois has picked it up, Parkland College, a number of churches in the community, a number of other organizations have been showing the film. We have over 1,300, we had 13 showings total, and over 1,400 individuals in the community have seen the film, participating in conversations about race and small group conversations. It's really a fabulous tool. It's not the best, it's not the only one, but it's the tool we've been using to help facilitate conversations around race. We have our next showing on November 9th. And so our focus on this one, it's been nice because we've had film showings for youth and students through the high school. So this next one, we're focusing on how to get more men out. About 65% of the folks that have seen the film are females or women. And we need to get more black and white men out having these conversations about race. And so just really excited about the work we've been doing. We've also helped Decatur, Springfield, Muhammad, a number of communities throughout the state. We've gone over and helped them set up how to show the film and help facilitate the conversation. So we've been doing a lot of work through the coalition and showing of the Racial Taboo films. A couple of years ago, we started really putting focuses on getting out into the neighborhoods. So what we heard from neighborhood groups and individuals is that, yeah, you guys sit in your buildings and we have to come to you to get information, and you guys don't know what's going on in the neighborhood. So quarterly, we go out into different neighborhoods all across the community to do our Walk as One events. We just had a really great one in September that United Way led, and so we had a simultaneous walk in Champaign out in the Garden Hills area, and then we walked right out here in the neighborhoods. So we go out, we pass out information, we hear from residents. We have teams that are made up of law enforcement, volunteers from across the community that go out, and I don't have numbers. It'd be interesting to see how many folks have actually participated in these events. But we were right over here in the Learman area in September passing out information about kindergarten readiness. So just getting information out to families here in the neighborhoods, getting law enforcement out with us. So we go. It's a great event. So we've got a number of identified neighborhoods that are having more challenges, more issues than another. So we've got the Vauder area, which is right over off of Philo in Urbana. We had kind of adopted that neighborhood this year. So we've got programming we've been doing over there to help create neighborhood activity. We've employed some of the youth to go around and help do cleanup and some of those types of things. We've had some great block parties where we bring out DJs and food and all of those types of things. And we've done that throughout the community as well. In the Garden Hills area, we had a fantastic initiative for the second year where we've invited fathers of those neighborhoods to come out for a day, basketball activities. So you can see in the slides where we put the rims right in the middle of the street. Agencies come out with information booths. We have food. And these are daytime activities during the summer to help reach and build neighborhood connection. In the recreation area, I'm sure you've heard a lot about our midnight basketball work that we've been one of the main primary funders of. So every Friday night right now, we have about 175 youth out, mostly boys, but girls are coming. It's kind of a cool thing. They have DJs. They have they start off with prayer and leadership conversations. They have speakers that come out, and then the guys go into teams and the midnight basketball really has just exploded throughout the community, and we've been able to, they've formed teams that play in tournaments, and it was really nice with Champaign-Urbana Day. They had their midnight basketball shirts on, and they won the tournament, and so they've built a nice connection. Reverend Comer has just done a fabulous job with that initiative. We have C3. This was the second year of doing our campus community connection. So we take with community organizations, Urbana Neighborhood Connections, Boys and Girls Club, our park districts, and we take students up on campus each Wednesday through the summer for non-traditional programming. So you see on there the kids learn about wheelchair basketball, canoeing, boating, rock climbing. They don't play basketball as much. Because we're trying to do different programming and exposure to these kids. They get to eat in the dorms to get a chance to see a little bit more about what campus life is like, hopefully exposing community kids to our wonderful and beautiful campus here that for most of them, it's the first time they're on there and getting a chance to see it differently. So just great work. First String is a baseball league in North Champaign. Teaching kids about Little League Baseball. So it's a development leadership initiative as well. So I'll be quicker. Arts, we are in Champaign Schools doing some dance camps. Again, in the Urbana neighborhood, we've been doing some arts and crafts and dance activities. And then I'm sure you've heard about the Banks Bridgewater Lewis Academy. We redeveloped the, what you see there on the slides is the drum corps. So in the 60s and 70s, this was one of the premier drum corps in the country. And we've been able to reignite or start over the drum corps this year. So you see the pictures the kids have performed. They learn about drumming, working as a team and as a group. And we do that through the Banks Bridgewater Academy. So last night, going to finish up on this slide. So last night, we presented our CU Fresh Start update to Champaign City Council. We're going to put this show on the road, I guess, to talk about the work we've been doing over the last year around CU Fresh Start. CU Fresh Start is our initiative to help address our community gun violence issue. It has a three-pillar approach, as we call it. So it's law enforcement working with community, service providers to address individuals who are most likely involved in gun violence. They have a history of it, their associations, and so we do what we call a call-in, which is we bring these guys in, we kind of say we know who you are, this is your opportunity to change, we are serious that the gun violence must stop, this is a very unified message with city leadership, community agencies, law enforcement. We work with, we have a group of ex-offenders who have turned their lives around for messaging and peer work. And we also are working with a couple of families that have been directly impacted by gun violence. And so we released our information. The board funds our community liaison position that works directly with this group of individuals. We were able to leverage a grant through the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority for $127,000 this first year to hire a coordinator for program activities to do some research on our work, as well as fund some training services that we've done. So again, last night we released all of the information that we've done. So you have in your packet, Lynn copied for you, one of our tools. Yeah, separate from the packet again. Copy of one of our assessment tools, or I'm sorry, one of the research documents that was created. So we had one that just did an assessment of our work structurally, how we're organized, and then we also did some community surveying with some really interesting work. Yes, that's the document. It's one of them. It's one of them. So you have that in front of you. I'll be glad to get you a complete packet of all the information. So let me just quickly share with you. So we had 20 guys that we brought in for our gun violence initiative. 9 chose to not engage and participate. So last night we released that data. So out of the 9, 4 have gone back to the Department of Corrections. 3 have pending cases. 1 is actually deceased. He was involved in our gun violence incident. And then we have 11 in different places. So of the 11, 4 of them have new charges that we've been working with. 5 are still engaged. We've had 1 complete his probation or parole who's said, thank you, I am good. So the data talks about 20% of the guys will choose to participate and make and join what we're doing. We're kind of hitting those numbers a little bit above that. But again, we released all of that information last night, and I'll be glad to get the board full packet. I'll be glad to bring part of the Fresh Start team to come back to another meeting if you'd like. And so the board has been critical and instrumental. It was Elaine was at our community coalition meeting last week, and we had some individuals over from Danville and Decatur coming to observe our community coalition. And they were just so impressed with the coalition. You know, most communities around the state are trying to figure out how do you get everyone to the table? How do you get law enforcement meeting with common citizens? How do you get the community organizations working together, coming together? And we've just, as a community, done a phenomenal job of coming together and working together to solve some really tough issues. Our shooting numbers are down this year. We're not trying to say that because of Fresh Start we've lowered them, but you know, we've got more community groups doing walks, vigils, saying the violence must stop. Law enforcement is working. We've got a street crimes task force that has been phenomenal. And catching the state's attorney's office has had some very key prosecutions this year to get some really bad guys off the streets. And so just really pleased that the progress we're making in a number of the areas. And again, most of this would not happen without the support of the board and the resources you've been able to provide to the coalition to help make so much of this stuff happen. So I'll stop there, and if you have any questions for me or just really want you all to know how appreciative we are.
Thank you, Tracy. If you look at what kids need to succeed in the Search Institute data, the summer initiatives cover so much of that. It's so important. And one of the questions I was going to ask you, I know you're doing, the YFC is doing, or Youth for Christ is doing the midnight basketball. I know they're trying now to do midnight or volleyball for girls and to set up a whole program for them.
Will you guys be involved in that, or do you think as we move forward, since it's been so successful?
Well, he has not approached me about volleyball yet.
Okay.
But we've been
it's
really
helpful. It's in their newsletter.
Yeah, we've been really helpful. So we've been able to help him find additional gyms. So because through the coalition, the park districts have opened up gyms. The school district has helped open up gyms. And we're paying, you know, very minimal fees, you know, really to just cover the maintenance and keeping the doors and close, you know, that type of thing. So I love the work that he's doing. When he first approached me, I said, hey, listen, the kids are playing too much basketball. And I wasn't a supporter, to be honest with you. But seeing how he's used this as a tool to address leadership, responsibility, accountability, kids do push-ups for cursing. They, you know, it's really become an institution within itself and just stuff like that. So discipline, leadership, you know, it is faith-based, you know, and that's controversial for some folks, but it is a faith-based initiative. And
but it works.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other board member questions or comments? Judy?
Just for my information, how long is the summer youth program? How many weeks?
Well, we usually start once we have word from the board that we will have funding. So this year we went from end of June, Ray, till September 30th. So they had the entire summer and early time period to do their activities.
Okay, and then is this 5 days a week?
Each one of the programs is different.
It's different.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so
and
they
the
have
hours are different also.
Yes.
Okay.
Before we go back, it sounds like you've got a lot of ripple effects in the community with what has happened under the coalition. More things are now happening because districts, park districts, school districts are making more space available or are participating. I mean, are you seeing a spread of impact beyond what you initially started?
I was
picking up on that. And
there
I
is no
to
doubt
emphasize.
That when we first started and had, you know, 6 to 8 people coming and trying to get people to the table, it's really been a significant explosion of partnership and collaboration, unparalleled in my 20-plus years of working in the community. So we have park districts working with schools. We have individuals working with schools or churches, doing partnership programs, sharing of resources. So I mentioned the Midnight Basketball Group. They partnered with Tracy Dace's group to take a group of students up. So we only had to raise about $1,000 that both of them were able to share to take. I mean, it's just been fantastic.
So going back to the ripple effects and the generation of additional support by other community groups, et cetera, what do you think it will take to continue to sustain what the coalition is doing? And I know that you've been successful at getting some other funding. Have you thought into the next year, 5 years? What will it take?
I'm just trying to keep my arms around the day to day right now, to be honest with you, Susan.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic. And so we've talked about pulling together and we just haven't gotten it done, a group to write grants. So over the last year, we've had a number of grants that have come to the community. And we've been trying to work to figure out who should be the lead agency, who should be the partners in the community. So I think we're going to really be able to sustain a number of things by finding additional resources with national grant opportunities, state funding opportunities. Julie Pride sent something today from Public Health that she thought would be fantastic for the coalition to look at. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. And so that's happening regularly. And so law enforcement grants. So this grant we received for the Fresh Start Initiative was something we didn't envision that opened up for us. We have submitted for 2 years of funding through that association. I'm feel very positive we're going to get that funding to continue the work of Fresh Start. So it's been a very positive ripple effect as you asked that question.
I just wanted to comment that even before I heard the presentation, just looking the materials over, this is an amazing number of human beings in our community involved in this. And the amount of the dollar amount is relatively small for the payoff of this. It's quite rare to see so many people involved, and not just agency people or not just people who have a career at it, but human beings who are volunteering, who are just part of the community. And it's just quite remarkable. I feel really thankful to have this be something that we're involved in. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you. I know Judy's had a chance to come to a couple of our monthly coalition meetings. We're averaging about 75 to 80 folks every month. Again, I've not been involved in a public community engagement tool like this. And the spirit and the energy in the room is fantastic. You know, I walk in tired and get energized by people coming in like, hey, let's do some work. Let's roll up our sleeves. And it's really very positive.
Trita, I was looking at in our packet, there's about 14 programs that you guys are doing. And as Julia mentioned, like, they're all like for small amounts of money. They're not big. They're not using a whole bunch of money to get those programs going. What happens to these kids when they get back into school? Or do you follow up with
them? Yeah, I think that's, well, most of the programs do, but I think that's the next key. So the executive committee through the coalition is putting some pressure on me to do some impact research so we can really determine and see what our true impact is. But so Tracy Dace's program, for example, it's a couple of years old. He's getting funding from you. He's getting funding from United Way. He's getting funding for the city of Champaign. He's really leveraged a lot of, most of us are not giving him all that much money when you really think about it. It probably totals less than $100,000, I'm sure. But what he's doing with young people, and then he's following them through the school year to see their academic performance, to see how they're performing, which is just key. So they're not in a program, and then, you know, the program is over. And so that's why I made the statement around getting low-income, underachieving kids in academic enrichment activities in the summer is so key, because, you know, they don't read in their family structures. So they lose all of their academic gains through the summer. So to be able to connect as many kids as we are in the summer with sometimes minimal, but sometimes very enriched and, academic stuff through the summer is just so key.
You know, I've attended these, not regularly, but I've attended these coalition meetings from the early on when you were meeting in the police station, and then you had to move. And I realized that other communities are coming around to see how you do it. I don't know if there is a template that you could use, but I do know that one of the things that other communities don't have is they don't have you, who have a long history in this community and have been doing this type of work for a long time with a whole bunch of people. And I think that matters a great deal. I can't imagine if we had to advertise for a director of the coalition, who could pull that off with just from walking into the community and doing stuff like that. So I don't think this is an accident that it's working and you're pulling that off.
Well, thanks, Tom, but there really are a lot of great people in this community doing a lot of great work. And I think just pulling us in the room together has been the key. And, I come with a lot of criticism too, right? We all know that. And what I went through, well, it's not necessary to go there, but yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much. I'm conscious of time, so unless there's a really compelling comment or question. Okay.
I just wanted to say, and you did say this, that all of these, or many of these, I know, are funded through individual donations, too. So there's a lot of the agencies that I know Midnight Basketball continues, and it's not just a summer program. It's year-round. So
thank you for your report. It was truly exciting to hear what's happened in the last 2 years.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on to sorry. Thank you, Ann. Okay. So next week we have a study session where we will talk about the process for reviewing. Today we have the priorities and decision support criteria in front of us. I think it's been updated a bit by you.
This is the update.
Because I don't remember Naoki Higashida quotes before.
And I didn't say what the disability is, but I think you can guess later.
Right. So are there comments or responses about this? Tom?
I just want to make one comment to the staff, and it's on page 10 in our packet, and it's under caveats and application process requirements. Oh, about one, two, three, about the third point down, it's about letters of support that won't be accepted. Right. I wonder if you might want to make that a stronger statement, because the way it reads is the letters of support for applications are discouraged. I wonder if you might not want to say letters of support will not be accepted. Because when you say discouraged, they'll be happy to read mine, but even though they won't read somebody else's. So.
Thank you.
Good suggestion. Julian.
So the main thing I want to say is that this rewriting is terrific.
Wonderful.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I must say this is the first time I actually fully grasped the whole thing and saw it clearly and saw reflected in it many of our things that we talked about and discussed. So I think you've done a great job putting this together. Thank you for that. And I have one question that's unclear to me. I don't know whether, and I may have missed it, but I don't know whether or not we have established a policy with regard to indirect costs, or if we want one, or if we're ever going to discuss that.
I have some opinions about it, but we haven't discussed it. We don't have a policy. And we haven't discussed it yet, and I think that if you want to discuss that, that would be the right place for me to bring my opinions instead of right now, don't you think?
So, Julian, are you suggesting that we develop a policy?
I'm suggesting maybe we could put it into our study session.
Yes, absolutely.
Sure.
Yes.
We've talked about it off and on.
We have.
But not really
would
settled.
Would you be comfortable including it just under that agenda item of discussing this document next week, because it.
However you
or do you
want to
add
it?
Why don't we explicitly add it? Because we know from conversations last year that some agencies charge indirect costs, some do not.
Right.
And indirect cost varies across the agencies that do charge it, and it's not always clear what the basis is.
Right. Well, it is. We do ask for very detailed information in the application about what the indirect cost is composed of, because, well, I'll just share my strong opinion. I don't think we should have a policy for that. I think it would not serve us well. I think it's important to look at what's in the indirect cost and decide if that's acceptable. And the information is provided to us. If that information is not clear enough, we can ask for more, because it is a really important parameter. But I think if we cap indirect costs, we're going to run into some problems with not being able to fund anyone but the largest agencies. And some of the smaller agencies may run relatively small indirect costs depending on what they count. So it actually has a lot to do with what they're counting in that.
So let's have a discussion about what the policy should be. I don't particularly have one in – I don't have a – one I want to advocate for, although I do want to be able to know when I think, I mean, this is kind of high here, or maybe this is okay, or how do we do it? I just think we ought to know what we're doing about it.
Okay.
Would it be helpful for the next study session to have some information on, I know that some agencies will put rent directly into their request. Others put rent within indirect cost. So
that's where it gets
confusing.
Right.
Could we find out the percentage of applications that ask for indirect costs and what it is that you as staff know what is allowable?
You know, I think that would be impossible for us to put together for next week's study session. I think we should still add it as an agenda item and talk about it, but as far as providing you with specific examples, that we could do by November for the board meeting, right? I mean, it's...
Sure.
But we can have a discussion next week for sure. And it's very hard for us to bring Chris to evening meetings. Okay, we'll ask for his advice then.
Yeah, I don't want...
So, more discussion next week. And
so we've got a packet already for next week. So when we meet next week, we'll add it officially as an agenda item. And
however you decide you want to do it is fine. I just want to talk about it. So.
Yeah, and
I'll try to get some information together for that. I think it will be challenging to get as much information as you'll need to make a policy. So we should probably come back to the issue in November too.
We ready to move on? Any other comments about the allocation priorities? It was a pleasure to read.
Oh, great.
Thank you. Okay. Agency information. Do we have any agencies that would like to share information? Again, we limit it to 5 minutes. We've moved agency information back into new business so that you don't have to wait until the end of the meeting for agency information. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone leap forward, so we'll move on to old business. So old business included a summary of the work that agencies that were funded did during the prior funding period. And that was 100 plus pages of reports. Do you have any comments that you'd like to make, Lynn?
It might be hard to look at because we're bringing documents from all sorts of file formats into Word. They have to be brought into Word to meet the accessibility standards. You might not know this, but the county is under an ADA settlement regarding accessibility of all its physical spaces and public websites. So this document is posted on our public website, as are a whole bunch of other board documents, but it has to be in Word. So we're importing things, and sometimes they become harder to read. So I'm really looking forward to next year when we have a template from the U of I, even though, like, as Susan mentioned, that will also make the content easier to follow, but for me it'll make it easier to make this aggregate document. which matters a lot. It takes a lot of time for us to put these together, but it is on the website if you're ever interested. It's just right there on the public face of the website. So you don't have to haul the 120 pages around with you.
I think that's important, and maybe I'd like to know how many people would be able to access it on the website, because frankly, I couldn't read anything that had been a PowerPoint slide. So
the point of having it in Word is that you can blow it up. And apparently not enough people have the Acrobat tools to blow up PDFs.
So would I be able to see it better online?
If you can't, then I want to report to the guy that we're paying for these opinions.
Okay. So really
that it doesn't work like he says.
My question to the board is it helpful to have it in paper copy like this, or would you rather know that it's available online and have a month or so to look at it and then have an opportunity for a discussion? Or are you happy with the paper copy?
Paper copy is good, but I also looked at it online. That's fine.
Okay. Okay, so far, paper wins. Just checking. I keep wanting to go online, but I won't. Thank you. Other comments about the report or reports? I almost feel like I need my questions from earlier in the spring that I asked the agencies in order to look at the report and know if the questions have been answered. So I feel a little ill-prepared to go into much depth.
Yeah.
All right, shall we move on? Put the mic back on. We have delayed a discussion of the Ebert Film Festival funding because of other issues that we've been addressing, but it is important that we come back and make a decision regarding whether or not the Mental Health Board will provide some underwriting for the film sponsorship. So we have a decision memorandum in front of us, and the process is usually to have a motion approving the decision memorandum and a second, if there's a second, and then discussion before we vote on yay or nay. Is there a motion to support the decision memorandum?
I'll move that.
Second. Okay. So moved by Ann and seconded by Kyle. Third by Joseph. discussion. Margaret.
So a couple things. I was thinking about one of the things Tom said a few meetings ago about looking at different ideas and innovative ideas. So how can we do something differently or look at I'm really into data, you know. And so I was thinking about, I've been reading a number of articles on inclusion and how do we include people within our community. And one of the things is to look at, there's a number of agencies across the country now that are working with business. So there can be startups in business to include people who are traditionally not included. The other thing I think of is with the art show, there are so many art shows that we have. I know one coming up in October, right? And to think about utilizing the funds for that, to have individuals who do display their art there, to do it within the framework of other community events, which is true inclusion. And for example, the Boneyard Festival, too, and all of them coming up. So to think about it that way. And so that's really what I've been thinking about. How can we do something, to try something different? And I also look at when Monica was talking, and we have so many immediate needs now. And to think about you're in the with the police and there are seven people being called at the same time and the resources, that's one example, or to look at the examples of prevention that Tracy just gave and to think about how we can use our money differently.
I know in the discussion that we had in approving it last time that there was a mixed reaction by the board and some concern, and that what I believe this proposal does is separate the Ebert Film Festival from anti-stigma events, because the Mental Health Board is involved in many anti-stigma events, including websites, et cetera. So that is not part of the Ebert Fest, per se. I'm trying to figure out how much of this is directly to pay for sponsorship of a film versus to support our anti-stigma efforts.
It works together.
The entire sponsorship is $15,000. Other alliance partners contribute money, and it's different every year based on how many partners we have. To offset the costs of staging the art show and then additional promotional materials. But what we've been doing with Ebert Fest is creating a very high platform, a really high profile for the anti-stigma message and for the artists. So I have every year for about 8 years had people say, I want to help the artists get into other community shows. And it's just, these are often very young people who need to stay involved with their own graduate work. And so they have good intentions, but they don't have the energy to do it. So we've had a hard time creating that opportunity. And then I hear, well, it's hard to get people to come see the Boneyard shows anyway, so they have this built-in audience here. So I appreciate your question, and I think my answer is that right now we can't separate them. We've used this to create a really high profile for the art show so that they have good attendance. And then we do the same thing with the expo, but they can't be involved with the expo in the future. There's not enough room at the new place. So there will be no art show at the expos, which is why we're doing an art show in October without the expo. So for Saturday. Yeah.
But people who would traditionally go to this, go to the art show that we're doing, right? Correct?
And this is the first time that we've done that, where we've separated out the art show from the expo. Okay. So we'll find out how it's going. We put it right in the middle of Lincoln Square, right after the farmers market. We put some bands in there. So it's, again, a really high profile, but it's our first, we won't know till Saturday, but I agree that we should try other things than we do. It's just sometimes nobody works as hard on our behalf as the College of Media when we've paid them for a film. It's been really great for a while. So
I have one other comment. I think the other thing I'm frustrated with, and I did try and look it up and couldn't find it fast enough. And I needed to just contact the News Gazette to see if they had the data. But I still would like to see, even based on the data of the interviews with students, is are we really reaching our community? I know there's a high number of people from outside of the Champaign-Urbana area that come to the festival, which is wonderful. It's a great festival. I would never argue that. I'm just thinking, with all of the issues that we're dealing with, is this a good use of our funding? I mean, I look at all the issues in our community right now. And
well, I just want to be clear that we're not voting for or against anti-stigma efforts. And that's one of the things that I wanted to clarify with this motion. I thought that the motion was specific to funding a film.
Yes.
And we've...
The motion is $15,000 for sponsorship of an anti-stigma film.
And right. So we still will be engaged in other anti-stigma efforts. We're not voting to pull out of anti-stigma if we vote to not support the film. Right. That's what I want to clarify.
You are right.
Okay. because there has been discussion that perhaps we've supported the films long enough, and isn't it time for the group that puts on Ebert Fest to assume support, that we have helped it for 8 years, and how long do we continue to help? I'm going to stop because I think there are other people that want to speak.
Well, I think I've been in favor of participating in this because it seems like, you know, $15,000 is not chump change, but compared to other things that we spend money on, it's not a huge amount of money. And the amount of publicity for the ideas that we get out of this is a large amount of publicity. And yes, I think it is reaching the community, and I think it's also reaching community people who are very involved with mental health and substance abuse and developmental disabilities. I don't know if Chaz Ebert and the other people on the committee would stop doing a specific anti-stigma film if we don't participate, but it's just an automatic way of putting it in. And I will tell you that before I even knew that there was a mental health board or anti-stigma or what it was called, Society for Inclusion and Respect. Yeah, whatever it's called. I saw a billboard for the movie and I thought, whoa, I had no idea that our community had such an organization. That is way cool. And I was happy to know about that. Because a lot of times we work in isolation, even though I've worked with mental health issues for years. And this plea for help from Rosencrantz, we're not able to provide enough money to buy clinicians for them. That's a separate issue.
But I look at our, for example, Urbana Neighborhood Connections, they get $12,000 to do a huge after-school program. So if you look at 15,000 versus 12 in serving students, I mean, I'm not against anti-stigma, please, you know, not at all. I'm just looking at other ways.
All I want to say is there's a synergistic effect that this film has over time in this community, which may be hard to grasp. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how to measure it, but one part of that effect is that this actually is terrific, raises awareness that there is a mental health board in this community. Now, that might seem like something that doesn't matter, but I think it does matter, because that attracts a lot of other interest and a lot of questions among citizens and so on. And so in addition to dealing with fitting it in, I think it does fit well within an anti-stigma approach. It's a legitimate, there's been an implication about this from people that I don't really grasp, that somehow this is not a legitimate activity for a mental health board, which seems to me completely wrong. So I simply think we ought to acknowledge the fact that this has brought a lot of favorable attention from many citizens to the kinds of issues that the mental health board cares about among numbers of people in the community who are opinion leaders. That is, they're people who have other effects on other people. And I think it would be not a good move for us to just stop doing it. I'd be willing, and I said all along, I'm willing to hear an alternative proposal. I'd like to hear what you want to do with that money instead. Then maybe we'd have something to talk about. But I have never heard any substantive proposal for any alternative that... So I don't have no idea what I'm comparing it to. So I hope we don't just stop doing something that's really been a big success.
I guess in a way I kind of want to double down on some of the things that Julian had mentioned. The idea that when we think about the people that go to Ebert Fest, these are people who are at least from my experience, what I've seen, people who are involved in the community. You know, we're not talking about renting out a theater at Savoy 16. You know, this is, I think, people who know people, like you said. And, I mean, film is magical. And that's the reality. You know, it's great having expos and fairs, but I don't think that necessarily draws in the same type of people. Not to say either is more impactful, but I think it brings in people who may not have gone out of their way to see this. And the reality is that as a society, we live in a bubble in this room where we care about mental health. And the reality is as a society, although we are much better than we've been in the past, people don't get it. And it's because of stigma. So being able to reach people who may not be the types that are already empathetic and don't need to be persuaded, but reaching people who are new people on this, I mean, this is such the powerful side. And we sit here as a government-appointed body, and we think about the systems that really benefit and affect mental health, it's through government. And we live in a democracy, and we cannot, you know, persuade people to take this type of stuff seriously if we don't win over hearts and minds. You know, you might not have a way to measure it about the impact of Ebert Fest, but, you know, this isn't biology, it's not calculus or algebra, this is a social science we're talking about, and it's not always measurable. And the power of influence and inspiration, there's no way to measure it, but it, undoubtedly this makes a difference.
Okay.
I am a member of this board because of Ebert Fest. It's personal. The first time I went to an Ebert Fest was right after my brother had ended his life through suicide. And I spoke after the movie, I think it was called The Violinist. I've always known about the Mental Health Board because through Operation Snowball, we received monies from the Mental Health Board. And I want this. It gave me an opportunity to say to the community that is, there is no stigma. We've got to get beyond it. My brother was a very wealthy man, but he was not wealthy when it came to issues of mental health. And I lived a few blocks from him, and he did not reach out. This $15,000 is really, to me, yes, it is. I don't have $15,000 in the bank that I can pull out. However, it would be something that I think we as a community, we as a as an organization, as a board, ought to support.
I'm of the impression that if we could, in fact, around in our community, around the nation in general, if we could reduce the stigma that's attached to mental health or mental illness, we would do a lot better with people who suffer with that than all the programs that we run. I think I'm of the impression that we need to have far more anti-stigma work. We need to have far more programs. We need to have, to me, Eberfest is just, it's just small compared to the importance of anti-stigma around these issues. I mean, I think we ought to make sure that our awardees who get money from us are doing a lot of work with anti-stigma. I don't think we can do enough about anti-stigma around these issues. And so I would love to see us sponsor this film and another one and another one and another one. How many people here remember years ago there was a TV program that was called As Life Goes On? It was a great show with Corky, who was a Down syndrome kid. That show did so much to educate people about Down syndrome kids. So I think we, this is my opinion, I think we need to keep doing this, and we should do it forever. And when Eberfest ends in next century, they say, and a persistent contributor was the Champaign County Mental Health Board. So.
I just want to, when I was reading this and thinking about how I would make my decision, my question was, after all the years of supporting Eberfest, have we sold them? Are they invested in anti-stigma on their own if we weren't there? I mean, I think I heard Chaz talk about how important mental health issues were to our country. And you know what? I don't know right now how I'm going to vote, but I would hope that after all the investment we made in Eberfest over the years, that we made a difference for all of those people and that they would continue. I don't have an answer to that, but I would hope that they wouldn't stop it because of one vote.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Judy O'Connor?
Yes.
Joe Omoasagie?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Margaret White?
No.
Susan Fowler?
No.
Motion passes.
Keep forgetting to turn the microphone on. On page 136, agency information, it says Gail Rainey from Prairie Center Health Systems announced the merger between Prairie Center and Rosecrans. I thought she announced conversations about a merger. Has the merger, in fact, taken place? No. So I would recommend amending it to announced conversations are occurring regarding the merger.
An expert is nodding.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I was watching the the expert. Any other comments or changes about the minutes? So do we have a motion to approve the minutes? Okay, and I don't have to amend them, do I, with the correction?
Is that right?
Approval to amend the minutes as with the correction. Okay, your motion's for that.
Yes.
Okay, great. And Ann seconding the correction. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Okay. Executive director comments.
How much time should I take? 30 seconds?
About 30 seconds would be great.
This is hard. Saturday at Lincoln Square from noon to 3, we have an event it's like the expo without the expo. So it's everything else. It's all the extras that we've been doing with the expo in a place that's familiar to people. So it's got entertainment and those artists and entrepreneurs. It's got us with T-shirts and save the date magnets so that everybody knows when the real next expo is going to be, because we moved it not only to another new location, which is the Vineyard Church, but we also moved it from October to April. So people might be looking for it right now, so we wanted to give them something they would recognize and then drive some traffic to meet those artists, because I've heard this input that this board has been giving for a couple of years about wanting us to try kind of new things around anti-stigma, and so this is one of the things we're trying. So come out and see and buy some art. These are magnets for the April event, but we'll be passing these out. The other thing we're doing on Saturday at Lincoln Square is passing out this. I wanted it to be a little bit smaller, but I can't get all that information on there. And we've been working on these pretty steadily for a couple of weeks. It's a set of online surveys. So right before we do the next three-year plan, which we'll be working on the next three-year plan next summer, we do a community needs assessment. We've never done an online survey before of people who receive services, people who live with them or are related to them or somehow involved in their care, interested parties, like government stakeholders who have an interest, and then providers themselves. So we're developing these online surveys. They're going to launch on Saturday. So we'll be passing out the postcard in order to get as many people that we might not otherwise reach to look at the survey and fill out whichever survey they believe applies to them. So other than that, another anti-stigma related bit of news is that last week with participation from a county board member, and with Susan's guidance, I submitted an application for a two-year arts project. It doesn't bring any money to the community, but it takes some of the people who've worked on these little art shows for us for 10 years and some of the artists to a couple of workshops with other people from around the country to talk about how to better connect us to things like the Boneyard Festival, how to use social media more effectively, how to make it more of a, you know, like an economic development activity for the community, because some people really do earn a living off of their art, and we want to try to move in that direction for some of these people. So that was really fun. It was exciting to submit an application myself. I'm not usually on that side of things. So that's the main. That was more than 30 seconds. I'm sorry.
And the art initiative. The art application has gotten lots of positive feedback from all of the people who are asked to be on it. So I think there's a new coalition, and it's art.
Can I just, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I want to ask whether or not there is any interest, not committing anybody to anything. There's a fellow in Chicago named Pat Corrigan. Maybe some of you heard of him. He's an expert in stigma. He's written books about it, and particularly stigma for people with serious mental illness. It occurred to me that because we've been trying to figure out what we ought to do, he's close enough, maybe we ought to think about bringing him down here for some sort of presentation, workshop, activity. I don't know. I haven't spoken to anybody about it. Just occurred to me that if there's some interest, maybe we should think about pursuing something like that with someone who's actually been professionally involved in precisely these kinds of activities. Just wanted to get it out on the table for people to think about.
The staff have been really busy, clearly involved in a lot of activity to move initiatives forward, as well as doing their daily work. And we have staff reports, pages 140 to 178, that just tell us how active and involved the staff have been. Is there anything that Stephanie or Mark would like to add, who are here representing staff? Otherwise, I recommend that you read the reports, and thank you very much for them. Moving on to number 13 is the consultant's report on the annual Disability Resource Expo. It's also there for your review. Any questions on the report? Okay, moving on before Tom leaves, we have board. I'm going to once again defer board to board reports because we really need to take action on the financial information. And then if there is, if we have 5 minutes, we could do some board to board. So we have the financial information for the past month presented on pages 180 to 187. Does anyone have any questions about the expenditures? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. So back to board reports. Does anyone have a report from liaising with the board that they'd like to share briefly?
I just have a quick one, is that the Muhammad Area Youth Club is having an open house on November 18th, and it's, I think, from noon. I'll send out the information or ask them to send out the information. I had it in my, I wrote it down in my last book when we didn't do that. But it's a great way to see their facility and then how they're interacting within the schools.
Okay, great. Any others? Anne?
I just want to report that the Courage Connection is doing much, much better. And I think most of you are aware that they almost had to close. Mm-hmm. They came this close to having to close. And through the efforts of some pretty dedicated community people and a lot of individuals coming forward with donations at the last minute, they did a stopgap, and then, of course, we got a state budget. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been such a good picture. But they're actually doing pretty well right now.
Great. Okay, just a straw vote for those who can be here next week for the study session to see if we'll have a quorum.
I can be here until 7.
Okay. We'll plan it that way. All right, great. Board announcements? All right, adjournment.
No, I have two announcements. I sent them both to Lynn this afternoon, unfortunately, because I just was able to do my Carl email today. Carl Foundation Day is the first Thursday of November. It's free, and it's not specifically medical this time. It's very community-oriented. And I sent Lynn the – maybe you can send it out to people – you have to register, but there's no cost for registration. And the topic is called The Medicalization of Poverty, which was a title that made me a little nervous. But when I looked at the people that they have lined up and the things they're talking about, it's exactly what we talk about here. They're talking about gun violence. They're talking about youth. They're talking about education. And the basic idea is, for a healthcare institution, we end up taking care of people for problems that could have been prevented if they had had a decent place to live, if they'd had decent food, if they'd had decent education, then they wouldn't be in the intensive care unit.
What was the date?
It's November 2 is Thursday. That's the main day. And then November 3, they're doing a two-day event because they're doing a scholar session on November 3 for people that are actually doing studying in those areas, I think. But I don't really know. But all the workshops are November 2. Okay. So, Lynn, could you send that out? to people. And then also on the anti-stigma, there was something from Gateway Foundation. They're doing two programs for healthcare providers, but basically social workers, nurses, everybody except physicians, about anti-stigma, and it's a whole-day program. The first one, unfortunately, is tomorrow, and then I think they've got one in a couple of weeks, and I don't know what the registration is for that. You can forward that, too.
Okay, great.
So other people are doing things.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Today was, it's past now, today was the depression screen, community depression screen day at Parkland College. And at Parkland also on November 18th is the International Survivors of Suicide Day. So we're having a program. It's a Saturday, so from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. Registration is you need to register. And lunch will be provided, and it's a conversation. There's a video and things like that, too. Okay.
Great. Okay. Motion to adjourn? So moved. All in favor? Yay.
Okay.